Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with jazz singer Sanaya Carroll. Sanaya, having danced around singing all of her life, beginning very, very young when she and her cousins would make up songs and at 3, 4, and 5 perform for their families, Sanaya has toyed with many, many different forms of singing. But as you will hear her say, in the last couple of years, she discovered her voice. And that voice is jazz. And being able to accomplish a dream, she has created her very first CD. She will talk about her life and the creation of the CD. And you will hear some cuts from this lovely album. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from
dreamers and
just flies. How love can go from warm hellos to sad goodbyes, and leave you with the memories you've memorized to keep your winters warm. For there is no yes in yesterday, and who knows what tomorrow brings or takes away, as long as I'm still in the game I wanna play. For life, for laughs, for love. So here's to life and every joy it brings. Here's to
to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. It may seem ironic that I say that it is possible to be someone you aren't, but my experience as a psychotherapist suggests that lots of people don't know all there is to know about themselves, are in ignorance or in denial for important aspects of themselves, trying to be something that they're not, and at the same time not being able to be all that they are. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you hear them talk, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And my interviewee today, Sanaya Carroll, is a lovely example of someone who, you'll hear her say, that she always knew she could sing. She just didn't think it was that big a deal. She thought lots of people can sing. Maybe everybody could sing. So you'll hear her describe when she was first told by someone who she believed that she was a singer, and how she experimented with so many different forms of using her voice. And now, gratefully for her and for us, she has discovered that jazz is her voice. The voice that you heard singing Here's to Life that opened this show is, of course, Sanaya Carroll. And after her interview, I'm going to play another cut from that CD. But now, here is Sanaya Carroll. So I am here with Sanaya Carroll, and I'm explaining to Sanaya that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I know that the art to which you are giving your life and making some of your living is the art of singing. I only ask one question, and that is, do you remember the very first time that singing, music, performing, any of that called you, became interesting to you?
Oh. I think as a kid, this is way back. North Philly, my niece and nephew were younger than me, and we would put on shows on Fridays for the parents.
How old were you?
Oh, I don't know, 5.
Yeah, you know. And what kind of shows did you put on?
We used to make up little songs and stuff. I used to like to make up little songs.
So, do you remember that in these performances that you liked singing, that you liked people watching you, or you don't remember that at all?
Oh, I think I did like it. I enjoyed it. I was youngest in my family. I think
my position in my family, in my head, was to be the one who entertained. The one who kept tensions at ease. The one who would, you know, distract people from feeling the anxiety they might feel with lots of different life, adult situations that, of course, I didn't necessarily understand. But what I would do was sort of break the tension and be the clown or be the, just be the distraction.
Right. So part of that job was singing.
Oh, yeah.
Performing.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And it's interesting. You said you guys made up songs. You didn't sing songs off the radio or something like that?
Well, we love the Beatles.
Oh, I see.
Love the Beatles. And I would make up some little songs. You want to hear my first song?
Yeah, of course.
I was probably 4 years old. I still remember it. Punky, punky, pumpkin, happy all the day. Do you know what pumpkin usually says? It's time for Halloween and the people buy the pumpkins and sometimes they use them for a pumpkin pie.
When you were four?
Yeah, I was really, like, I wasn't in school or anything.
That's great. That's amazing. So you started doing this, well, creating, perform, not only singing, but making up music, right?
Yeah, you know.
That's great. Okay, so you started performing very young.
I guess so.
You
know, in a house. House shows.
But doesn't, yeah, well, that's where they start. I mean, at four, it's unlikely you're going to be on a stage somewhere. So that's where, you know, that's where it starts. So after the performances with your niece and nephew, what's the next thing you remember that has to do with you performing or singing?
Big thing? I think it was after first grade. It was during the summer. And I went to Catholic school. Mm-hmm. And one of the nuns said, so you're going to be a big girl in second grade next year? And I said, yeah. And they said, you know, we think we want you to sing in the Christmas show next year. I was like, what? Yeah, we'd like you to sing Silent Night. And I was like, you want me to? I was like, what? I'm going to get to sing for the whole school? And I was so excited. I remember I ran all the way home and I told my mom, I said, Mother, we called her Mother. Mother, I'm going to get to sing Silent. And I called it Silent Night. Silent Night. And I have to start to practice. So I remember, I don't know, maybe in the kitchen or somewhere, and I'm singing, Silent Night, Holy Night. And then my mother, she said, you know, it's really not Silent Night, it's Silent. Silent Night. Really? Anyway, that's when I learned to say it the right way.
Well, how do you know why they chose you to do that?
I guess you do really hear those individual voices, or you'll have...
Oh, you mean you would sing with
I was in a group of people singing. I didn't sing alone.
Well, wait a minute. You were in a group in school singing?
Yeah, the Glee Club.
The Glee Club.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So they did. Of course, they heard you.
Yeah, but they didn't hear me alone. They heard me with all the other kids.
Well...
That's what I'm saying. They heard something.
Yeah,
and I was
right.
Like, wow, how'd they know? So, and they kind of... I guess by doing that, they changed the trajectory of my musical life in school, because once you get to sing a solo in the show, well, of course you're going to sing in third grade and fourth grade and fifth grade. You're going to develop that persona of the girl who, the little kid who can sing.
Well, I somewhat. Think they changed the trajectory of your life, not just your life in school.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, they don't do that. You don't have this idea that you're a singer.
Yeah, or that you could actually do it.
You could actually do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it might have happened anyway, but this is a very powerful example of the impact that teachers have.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you remember singing Silent Night?
Yeah, it was great.
Yes, you did.
And then another year I sang, we did Santa Lucia, and they asked me to sing that song.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn it in Italian. Sul mare Lucia, rostro giarento. La chica Ilona, prospero evento. And that must have been maybe fourth grade.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really cool. You know, I think about it because I can remember that. I can't remember stuff from yesterday, but I can remember.
No, that's right. Okay, so you're still in elementary school, right?
Yep.
Okay, so in a middle school or junior high school or high school?
For us, elementary school went through eighth grade. So what happened eventually is that we started having guitar masses. And my sister was really into folk music. We were the North Philly family that was a little bit different. And we listened to all the pop stuff, you know, James Brown or whatever. But we also, my sister had this, like, Joan Baez and Phil Oakes and Donovan. Oh, I love Donovan. Mm-hmm. And Buffy St. Marie. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, all these folk people. And my sister started playing guitar. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, of course, I was looking at my big sister because I wanted to play guitar. Finally, I got a guitar because my nephew
found the guitar, and they were upset that he found this guitar. I think he found it on the street or something, and so they gave it to me. Because they didn't know who it belonged to, for real, so they gave it to me. That was his punishment. Anyway, I used a guitar, and then when we started having guitar masses at my Catholic church, of course, and my sister showed me, when I was 12 years old, I went to a day camp, and they had guitars there. This was in North Philly, and they actually had a whole rack of guitars, and they were showing us how to play these songs, and we would use the first three strings on a guitar with using one finger and maybe two fingers to make these very rudimentary chords, I guess abbreviated chords. And so I remember doing, you know, like, Michael wrote and so you do that. And it was cool. Mm-hmm. We loved it. And then I came home, I was so excited, and I told my sister, and I had that guitar now, so I was trying it on that thing at home. And she said, well, why don't you try the whole chord? So she showed me how to do a complete C. Mm-hmm. And a G and a D. And then I started looking at these, you know, books that had guitar charts in them. Real simple stuff. And I loved it. Then I could sing with the guitar, which was like, that was it. And then we had guitar masses, and it was just great.
You know? So you would play in the guitar masses?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And okay. I used to play at home all the time, and when people would come to the house, oh, God, my mother, get your guitar. Bring it down. Mr. So-and-so is here. I was like, and at first it was fun. Mm-hmm. But then after a while, it got to be like, not again, Mom. Stop. You know.
Well, were you embarrassed, or you really didn't feel like it?
I was embarrassed. It was starting to feel like they expected me to do it. I was like the performer.
And they did expect you to do it.
On demand. And it was like, I didn't want to necessarily do it on demand, you know.
Yeah. But well, this is another thing altogether, I think. This is, this is a little rebellious thing going on.
Oh, now, yeah. Right? And getting older, you know, 12, 13, mm-hmm. you know, 14. It's like, you know, but still, it was great. It was great to play guitar. It definitely set you apart where I lived, mm-hmm. you know, not... And I used to give out guitar lessons to other kids in another parish and for their guitar masses and stuff like that. So that was kind of cool. Yeah, we used to have fun. We used to sit on the porch in North Philly and would sing one of our favorite songs was, If you want it, here it is, come and get it. Right. Oh my God. I can't. Anyway, we were pretty wild. It was fun.
Okay, so eighth grade, right? Then now you're going to be in high school.
Yep.
And so what happens there?
Was making up songs. I started making up songs in grade school. Of course, I kept, you know, with the guitar, though. I remember I got into a contest once. I might have been in eighth grade, maybe ninth grade. I got into this contest, a talent show, and I sang one of my songs that I just loved. Mm-hmm. And I came in second.
Wow.
And I was very upset.
Oh, because you wanted to be first?
Oh, absolutely. I know. I can't believe it. I was like, what? I didn't get to be first. Had an attitude. But anyway, so high school, kept playing. They had a thing called the liturgical committee. So we used to, you know, play for that. Then there was another girl there, Joanne DeSimone, still down in Philly. And she played guitar. And she had a good voice, mm-hmm. which was perfect. Because then we started writing a couple of songs together. And we would sing. And we just got to be known as, like, the singing duo, mm-hmm. doing our pretty much folk music at that time. And we played at a folk festival, I think at one of the campuses of Penn State. Hmm. Something she was very, I gotta give her credit, she was always going out there. I mean, she made things happen for herself. She got affiliated with bands. By the time she was a senior, she was affiliated with jazz bands in the city and whatever. I mean, I hadn't done anything. I just did my life, but I played when I played, you know.
Well, that brings up the question. Were you thinking about music as a career, as a life?
Probably not. I got, upon graduating from high school, I got a scholarship, a four-year scholarship, full-paid scholarship to Chestnut Hill, mm-hmm. in music.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right?
An all-girls college. And I had gone to an all-girls high school. Except for my senior year, our high school closed because they ran out of funds. So we were taken in that last class. We had 44 girls that were taken in by LaSalle College High School. And they had 900 boys and 44 girls.
Oh, my gosh.
It was kind of a culture shock in many ways.
Oh,
and most
my
of
God.
Them, and there were maybe, out of that 900 number, we might have had 25, maybe, black students.
Oi.
Yeah, and out of... The girls, now my little high school, even though it was a girls' school, it was kind of interesting. We probably had a 35% of the students were African American, which is pretty surprising.
Yeah.
But it was really inexpensive, and we had to pay to go there, but mm-hmm. it really wasn't that much. It was just a neat, I loved that. Was Angela Domini. It's gone. The place is gone, but it burned down everything, you know, eventually. But it was a wonderful, wonderful school experience for those 4 years. Well, 3 years.
Well, three and three quarters.
Yeah, really.
So that last part of your high school must have been very difficult.
It was fascinating.
Oh, really?
I got to see that I didn't know that boys studied poetry.
Oh.
I just assumed, I had all these assumptions that I didn't even know I had, which is really interesting. When you're only around a group of people,
that's right.
You don't even know what assumptions you're making about other groups. You don't even know that you're learning by what you hear or what you feel or what somebody might say in passing or what you see on TV. You don't even know that you have absorbed it so thoroughly. And so when I found that, boys wrote poetry and it was beautiful mm-hmm. and that they could be just as sensitive about certain things as some of the girls were, and sometimes more so, I was shocked.
Yeah.
One of my fun memories though is being, I was in a math class. I hated math and I wasn't good at it, and nobody was able to teach me in a way that I got it. But I started taking math, algebra 2 as a senior, and there I am in this classroom, and it was all boys.
And you?
And all white, and then there's me. And I mean, these kids, and they weren't, and not a lot of them weren't seniors, because, you know, most seniors didn't take algebra 2, they had already done that. So they had, talk about spitballs. I had never seen spitballs with the straw.
God.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Spitballs with the straw. It was hysterical. Eating sunflower seeds with the shell. I was like, where am I? And I didn't. I had a rough time. I mean, I remember I used to sit in class and I pretended the teacher was speaking Arabic because that's what it felt like. It's like, what is he saying?
Oh, my
God. I don't understand anything. What did he say?
Oh,
and I'd go to get extra help and it would happen again. It's like, I had to shake my head. What did you just say? Could you repeat it again and again?
Oh, my God.
I got through it.
Well, not only you got through it, you got this scholarship to the school. So,
well, I didn't go there. Yeah, I did. I did.
Well, you didn't go there. Clearly. But why didn't you go there?
Because it was all girls. I was done.
I
didn't want to go back to all girls. The one thing that was really great about LaSalle College High School for me is that because I was the singing student, whatever, mm-hmm. They wanted a jazz singer for their jazz band, and they asked me to do it. And so I got to sing with a big band, a high school big band, mm-hmm. but I got to sing, you know, like that's where I learned God Bless the Child. I would never have learned that.
Right.
My mother didn't even like Billie Holiday. But I learned a variety of, not a whole lot, but maybe about 5 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to sing them and perform with this band. So that was really a good thing.
Okay, but still, you're not thinking about music as a career.
Not really.
Are you thinking about a career?
I thought about theater.
Oh.
That's what I thought. We would, I was with the Catholic Youth Organization, and because of that, we would go out. They had all these trips up to New York. We went to musicals a lot.
Wow.
It was wonderful. I saw quite a number of musicals and up in New York. It was great. And there would be bus trips. And that's what got me. So that was my goal. My goal was to become good into theater. That's what I really wanted. I wanted to be in musicals.
So did you major in theater?
I ended up going to Wesleyan, and I ended up thinking my whole, the essay you write had to do with theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to Wesleyan, and I start, you know, start looking at the plays and auditioning, and it's really hard. I mean, you know.
Well, you have no training.
I have no training, and I think the thing that hit me about the disadvantage in some ways, depends on what kind of person you are, and just how assertive and confident you are.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wasn't that confident. So I think I left North Philly, which was a rundown, somewhat troubled neighborhood where I was, but it wasn't horrible at all because I had a lot of good people there, but it was still, you know, working class or lower working class. So then I go to Wesleyan and there's all these people and even the people who were of color didn't come from North Philly.
No.
You know, they came from other places and they had other experiences. So I think I really wasn't, I think I was very a little bit intimidated. And when I saw, you know, the kids trying out and they just seemed to have this confidence,
it seemed to highlight my own lack of confidence, and I just decided I did a little bit, but not much. I did take theater classes. I took one of my favorite classes was vocal music for the theater, which was my one of my favorite professors, Stefan Esteban Vega, who's no longer with us, and also Fritz Du Bois, who also is no longer with us. But these guys really did change my life, and they both got to see me become more of who I am now, you know, which is kind of cool. But I did a cabaret. I worked in cabarets because it was, you know, a smaller group thing, and I felt I could do my own thing, and that's, I could learn about myself in that
way. Are you talking about in school?
Or in college, mm-hmm. you know, with the college courses I took that were theater-based. So I definitely took some theater. I didn't really pursue it the way I thought I would. I was a little surprised. I did get into concert choir and Wesleyan Singers, and I did sing, and I got to do my first, call it an aria, like in The Messiah and different, you know, different, some German pieces I got to do with the choirs, which was really great, amazing. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never done that kind of music before in such a grandiose, it was just beautiful, and I just loved it. And then after college was over,
Well, so you graduated with what? A BA in
education in Spanish.
I see. How did that happen?
I was trying to figure out what I was going to be, and I kept trying things out. So I tried theater, I tried anthropology, I tried psychology. I just kept trying things, and it was like the process of elimination.
Right. This doesn't work, this doesn't work, I can't do this, whatever.
And for all kinds of reasons. And then I think it was after I came back from Spain. I spent a semester abroad, and I came back, and I took this education class. I think it was as a junior, and I fell in love.
Wow!
It was like I'd done a lot of work with kids, like even as a elementary, like a 13-year-old. I was the musical director. They called me that for the little camp that they had at my parochial school as a kid. So I used to lead the kids in song with the guitar, and I was like the Pied Piper.
Right, and I didn't even,
you know, it was amazing. I think about that. If I knew a kid now who did that, I'd be like, wow.
Yeah, right.
But I was that kid. So I always liked working with the kids. So when I took these education classes, I think it was Daryl Laycock and this other guy up at Wesleyan. Oh, my God. I said, this is it. Right. This is where I can bring it all together. I can bring in the music. I can bring in the theater. I can bring in all the things to make whatever I'm teaching or make my classroom come to life. So I decided to major in education, and I loved my classes. I was totally inspired, and you know, after college, I did teach for a whole year. I taught at Newark Academy in Livingston, New Jersey, and I was the black teacher in the school.
You're kidding?
No, it was kind of like. You have to get used to just dealing with it. If you're going to once you leave the neighborhood, and you're doing anything, doing a lot of things, you might find yourself being the only one. So you have to really find that sense of peace in yourself. You really do have to become self-possessed.
Yes,
I learned that. But Wesleyan was good. It taught me to really understand how rich I was, even if I didn't have money. That my the environment I grew up in and what I had, the wisdom I had got, you know, gleaned from that experience was very, very useful. And it was a treasure inside of me, even though I didn't come from a middle class background.
Right, I
brought my own thing, which was just as valuable. And that's what I learned at Wesleyan. Because otherwise, I think I would have fallen on my face. Mm-hmm. But I think about the people who don't have that.
I was just thinking the same thing.
So I was lucky. So I understand, you know, I always try to be aware that not everybody has that kind of a. They can think about it in their head and keep balancing it out. Because you do get messed up, but you have to keep rebalancing, you know, recalibrating.
Yeah, well, the environment keeps pushing you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because the environment is not going to make that easy.
No, and people don't, and you just have to just recalibrate.
Yeah.
Like a lot of
I mean, this is a lot of credit to your family and to the places that you, to your school, to your church, all those things that gave you that thing you have.
Yeah, my mom, she was instrumental. She really, she laid it on a line to me. I know this is a little bit off the music thing, but when I was a kid, I was very ashamed of where I came from. You know, once we took rides around the city, we didn't even have a car most of my life. We never had a car. But at some point in my teenage years, my father got a car. But we would take these rides.
And that's when I saw all these other parts of the city, and I just loved them. I thought they were so pretty, and I was fascinated, and I thought where I lived was horrible. Right. And I wrote a composition called The Long Ride Home, which basically wrote about, well, I was speaking of being in these other areas of the city and, you know, seeing the houses where they didn't shut their blinds every night because you don't want the neighbors to see anything. I mean, just a whole other kind of environment, and how fascinated I was with that and the people who lived there. And as we came closer and closer to my neighborhood, everything, the houses got more, they were closer together, and it became row homes leaning in on each other, and some crumbling, some not, you know, the black tarred streets and the trees, well, there were trees, but you know, these seem to be such sad trees because they you know, didn't have the space to just grow out like other places did. And so I wrote this whole composition, and it was kind of depressing. Mm-hmm. Well, my mother was very, very, one of the smartest people I ever knew, aside from my sister. And she would read my work a lot, and she would write in my journals. Just lady. She wrote, you know, she'd always write on the back page of my journals, which, you know, but it was kind of nice that she did that, even though it was a pain. So she wrote a whole addendum to this, and she added, Even though, you know, there are so many people, there are people here who don't care about the neighborhood, there are those who really do, and they work hard. And she wrote this whole thing, and basically saying that, yeah, we have the folks who don't care. Yeah, it's not pretty, but you have hardworking, God-fearing, family-loving people right here. You have these neighbors who care about you and about themselves and about each other, and they work hard to keep that going. And don't forget that.
No, and appreciate it.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. You know what? I got it.
Yeah, I see.
I got it. And I said, I can't cut off my own feet.
No, and because of course, that's exactly what it means, is that it's yourself that you're, that you're judging.
Exactly. Right. So that's the gift that carries me now.
That's right.
You know, that was one of the best things, without me knowing it, that's one of the best things she ever gave me, because that carries me even now.
So, okay, so you said you taught for 1 year?
Taught for 1 year at a private school in New mm-hmm. Jersey, and it was fascinating. I was, these were the kids who had maids. These were the kids who might have their own Lamborghini, or whose dad certainly did.
Right.
You know, I was teaching Spanish, and so these kids, they had Spanish maids. Yes. It was a whole other...
Yet again...
Yeah, and it was like Wesleyan on crack.
To yeah, me. Right.
Whoa. And there I was, very young. You know, if they were like 17, 16, 17, I was 22.
Yeah, right.
And I was insecure. So yeah. I used sarcasm. That was my, but it's a terrible thing to do. You
well,
know, teachers who are sarcastic to kids, it's bad.
Right.
But I would do that sometimes because I was terrified.
Yeah,
because
you didn't have other skills.
I didn't know what else to do.
Right.
You know, and I did... But it was a great experience in many ways. I learned a lot. I really learned about being assertive.
Mm-hmm.
The parents were very assertive. And I learned about taking care of myself. In other words, if you're going into a meeting and somebody's going to be evaluating you, well, you can evaluate them as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't go in just waiting to be slaughtered or anything. You know,
right.
You also speak your mind and let them know where you're coming from as well. So, and you can do it eloquently. So that's what I learned. It was good. I mean, there were a lot of... Did I do a lot of music? Not like I did in other places. I mean, I did some. But it was just a different environment. We did play guitars. I mean, we did have some fun times. Yeah. With the other teachers and stuff.
What happened after that?
After that, I moved to New York.
Aha! Oh, yeah. My God.
I moved to New York. And then I started... My first adult out-of-college relationship was with a guy who was a musician. But he was with Arista Records. He was an up-and-coming artist. I met him, and he was playing some music, and I think I sang along or something. So he is the one who said to me, you know, you're a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? Because I had never called myself a singer.
Yeah.
I could sing.
Right.
But I've been singing since second grade. I mean, no big deal with that. A lot of people sing. So we got together. But it was an amazing time because since he was so immersed in his career, I really got to see a bit of the jazz musician's career, you know, mm-hmm. what that world is like. And I met a lot of people, went to a lot of jazz clubs, heard a lot of music, was not a jazz, had no interest in being a jazz singer at all. I started getting involved in music.
Mm-hmm.
I got involved with a couple of bands, and it was definitely, you know, pop, R&B kind of stuff. You know, so I met a lot of singers. And the women who I met, they were, go get it. This mm-hmm. is New York, you don't play, you gotta go. That wasn't who I was. I just wasn't comfortable enough to do it. And so I found that I would shy away from
those situations. And then I also encountered a thing where an older white guy, he lived Central Park West, and he had a studio of sorts right there in his living room. You know, I was just the latest girl who was brought up to do some music. And so I sang, and he said, no, you got to sing it. Sing it. Can you put more soul in it? And he doesn't understand. I've been playing guitar.
You've been doing folk stuff, right?
Yeah, I was like, well, and you know, a little pop stuff, but it was definitely not anything hard. It wasn't even blues, because right. I didn't know anything about the blues, and I was scared of the blues anyway. So I'm like, wow. So he says, sing like you're in church, which made me look. I said, well, my Catholic church? Because that's the church I know. Mm-hmm. You sure you want me to sing like that? You know? And it became, you know, what you start to realize, of course, is that because you're African American, you're supposed to do it this way.
Right.
Because that's how you guys do it.
That's so, right.
Not, maybe, yeah. Up to a point, yeah, I can see what you're saying, but not necessarily. So, and at that point, I really didn't have the exposure or understanding of that music to do anything. I just didn't know it that well, you know. I hadn't, and not to say it wasn't there, because I mean, I'd listen, but I hadn't tried to emulate it.
Really. No, and none of the stuff you had been singing and performing was like that.
No, I wasn't doing any James Brown tunes or anything like that. A lot of things began happening in New York. A friend of mine from college with a band called Mikata. Mikata did world beat music, which really was West African music and soca music and Latin music, all original music. They were looking for another singer. Mm-hmm. So I ended up doing that for 9 years with that group.
And, wow.
And we used to perform at Sounds of Brazil in New York, which is still there every month. We went to Japan. When the Miami Sound Machine came out with their song, it was upsetting because it was so like our music, mm-hmm. and it really felt like the right time, the right place. Do you know the right person?
That's right.
And that's really what it comes down to. So that wasn't what we weren't that group. But I think we were all as good, every bit as good as anything they ever did. Really, that was a big education for me, and it was a lot of fun. But the other thing I did on the side, I started getting involved with getting calls to do backgrounds with some soca people. Got to go to Cartagena, Colombia, mm-hmm. to sing. I was the background singer for these guys. It's like, wow. And they played for a stadium, which is the biggest audience I've ever seen, ever, in my life. And I was like, wow. And I was the background. In my 20s, I got involved in storytelling. I learned African stories and Haitian stories and, you know, American stories. And so, and I found that in the stories, I could bring music and I could do movement. Any kind of movement I wanted, and I could do chants, and I could do audience involvement to whatever degree I felt the story would demand. And so I developed my way of telling a story, and it was really good. My ex-husband, we did it together. He played percussion, and I did the stories. We once went to Carl Robinson prison, and it was a big silver room, and all the guys there were brown, tan, and with a few pink sprinkled stuff to make up the chants to go with the stories. That's fun. So I had this one chant that was going, shake, shake. Drumming would be going, ding, 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 ding. And to that I go, shake, shake, shake it down. Ding, 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 shake, shake, shake it down. You know, well, the guys, they took it. They started going, shake, shake, shake it down. Ding, 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 shake, shake, shake it down. I went right with them.
Uh-huh.
It was amazing. But they took the story, they took ownership, and we did a few stories, or I did a few, and then at the end of it, they did the most amazing thing that I'll never forget for the rest of my life. When they gave me a standing O,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it.
Oh.
These inmates from Carl Robinson, they stood up. I was like, it's just two people telling, and I'm just telling stories, mm-hmm. but the stories
that captured them, right, had meaning for them.
And so that was what I found in the storytelling world, was that people seemed a little bit more authentic and sincere, less cutthroat, and I could find my way in that world a lot more easily than in the music world. And so I really said, okay, I'm going to do storytelling because the music is great and I love it, but there's so much game playing. You just have to be a certain kind of person to really work it,
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like I have the skills or the aptitude. So, but the storytelling is a different place. I can do it, and I can do my music here. So that worked really well, and it stayed that way for a long time. And it's only been since I've been here 2 years, but I've really been singing for a year and a half. Right? It's only since then I have been learning and succeeding bit by bit, with bringing the story to the song. Mm-hmm. Because, and that's, I think that's why jazz works so well for me, because I love stories. I always have. I love music. I love touching. I love that interplay, that movement, that energy, that give and take that happens between when you're on any kind of a stage and when you're talking to people. But it's not just you and the people. It's also the spiritual, I don't know, like an earth connection that is cyclical. Just goes, it comes up through you to them, through them, back down through you, and it goes like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just, when it's working, it is one, I mean, you really travel together. And I think the context of the story, whether it's just in the words and the images that they evoke, or the words and the melodies and the images and feelings, because melodies give you feelings as well, that happened there. When that happens, that's there's nothing to be said about that. I mean, I don't have a word for that. It's
magic.
Magic. Mm-hmm. And so as I learn more and more, or maybe what it comes down to is as I learn to surrender, mm-hmm. you know, my sense of needing to be in control and just let the story of that music come through. That is, mm-hmm. so that's what I'm loving. I was always afraid of that. And I think even with the singing for me now, I always used to feel like, wow, you really, I mean, I never felt like I was a great singer. I felt like I could sing, but I would look at all those shows. These kids are singing circles around me. Are you kidding? A lot of people could sing circles around me. But it's not so much that now I get. It's a lot more than people, anybody singing a certain way. It's just finding your voice, you know, your voice is not, and being true to that, and being true to what you're talking about, what the song is trying to communicate, what you're communicating as you interpret it, and also somewhat responding to what people are giving you back, mm-hmm. whether it's they're a blank face, or saying, mm-hmm. what's she talking about, or whether they're talking and eating their food.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes it's as simple as like, okay, you know, but that's going to happen as well, as well as somebody who's giving you rapt attention. So I feel like it's exciting, because I feel like it's been through jazz. Oh, and I was going to say, I used to feel like when I was singing that I was in this room, but if I opened this little door and looked into this other room, music magic was there. Like that the person who wasn't thinking about the note or wasn't, you know, scared to really sing or just let it go and stop thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the intellect would just sort of take a break and just go into feeling and heart and soul. And it was in that door. And I would sometimes in my life maybe open a door and put my little finger or my toe in there, and I'd just be so afraid and I just shut it and stop and go back into singing into my controlled way. And it's only been through jazz where that door has just open the door, here I am, and I've been swallowed up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been like, when did that start? And I didn't even know. It's like, that's why I said something happens with me in this music. It's not even, I never planned it. I didn't know it existed. But the things that I do sing I don't even know. I'm shocked. It's like, wow, wow. I'm still a little bit in awe, and I'm really, really grateful, because I feel like I, you know, easily could have gone throughout my entire life not really having found my voice.
Yes.
And I know how easy that is, so I got to find my voice.
Okay, so now talk about the CD so other people can find your voice.
CD's a complete dream come true. It was one of our goals for the year. I'm in awe and so grateful that people helped out, you know, mm-hmm. that anybody would care enough to help out. It's like, are you kidding me? So with the CD, it's just, it's imperfect, but I think I tried to be ambitious and try to do things I wouldn't usually do. I tried to make it a little off the beaten path and to use it as a way of exploring some other directions I see for my future, you know, mm-hmm. and just putting those feelers out there. How do I like it? How do I like it now? How do you like me now? You know? Yeah, I think I like you more now. You know? One of the songs, Be My Husband, which is like, I was listening to Diane Reeves sing, and I said, love that song. Then I heard other people sing it. I even heard Ed Sheeran. Mm-hmm. He does a version. You know, of course, you heard Nina do it, who basically influenced everybody. But I said, I have to do it. I want to do it, but I don't want to do it like them. So I have to make it mine. And I think I did.
Good.
And I love it. It really is. To me, it's like, it's a whole different voice. Mm-hmm. And I never really explored that voice before. And I said, we're going to have some more fun with that voice in the future. Because it's a fun voice. And yeah, it's cool. So I'm really excited about it. I'm thrilled about the CD party.
Well, let's talk about that. Tell when and where and all that.
CD party. It's going to be October 5th, Wednesday. And it will be from 7 till we leave. I guess I've never done a CD party before. So I'm thinking party. I'm thinking like, I want some party favors. You know, I want some like, you know, some stuff on the tables. I don't know what exactly.
Well, no. Come down and see it. You'll be surprised.
Yeah, come on down.
Okay, so and there will be CDs there.
Yeah,
and the name of the CD is?
Here's to You.
Perfect. Yep. And are you selling them at the party?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, how much are they?
They will be $15.
Mm-hmm.
And having Billy Marcus, woo! And yeah. That's a whole story right there. We won't get to that one. Yeah. But Billy has been instrumental to me. My goodness. I mean, this thing that I just met him at a jam, and then, you know, we cultivated a musical partnership as well as friendship has been wonderful. And then there's Don Mopsik on bass. And mm-hmm. He's like the surge. He's like a wealth of knowledge. He knows so much. And then there's Steve Buchholz.
On drums.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And can they get the CD on CD Baby?
Yeah, CD Baby, Amazon, all they do it on most of any site where you can buy CDs, it should be there.
Okay, so I ask one more question, and it is, you have spent your life really dancing around singing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's been there in one way or another everywhere.
Yeah. Right? Absolutely.
Right. And you've, as you said really articulately, you have discovered a way to do it and as you said, your voice. Could you just think for a second about what that means to you or how you feel about it?
I am ecstatic about it. I'm in awe of the whole thing. It's like, I found my voice. I'm going to follow it. It comes first.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching doesn't come first. When it comes to what I want to do, yeah, I'm going to do music, and I want to move as many people. I want to build bridges. I want to educate. I want to inspire, motivate, comfort. Whatever music does, all of those things, and that's what I want to do, and I want to let that come through me, and I want to learn as much as I possibly can learn. I mean, I feel like, and I guess maybe because I'm a little bit older than I would have been if I had done it in my 20s, so I have that. I have a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy, and some serious motivation. This is it, mm-hmm. You know. This is that chapter, and I'm just happy to have this chapter, and I'm not going to waste it. I'm not going to take it for granted. I'm just going to use it and have fun and just enjoy all the people who are involved. You know, just love it all.
It's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Sanaya.
Thank you.
I'm ecstatic. I found my voice, and I intend to use it. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to give it away. It is what I am. And I'm going to embrace it. This is what it sounds like when you have discovered who you really are. And Sanaya's story is so interesting because she knew from the beginning that she could sing. She knew many times in her life how much fun it was to sing. And she was unable to discover the way to express this thing that was so definitely her. And here it is. She's discovered it. She's embraced it. And she's experiencing what it is that I am hoping that every one of you will experience. And that is that when you are living the life you were meant to live, when you are being yourself, when you are speaking your voice, when you are expressing what it is in you to express, then what you have is joy. And of course, as I have said over and over, it is my hope that when you listen to Sanaya and people like Sanaya, that you say to yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Is this how I feel about what I'm doing with my life? That this is what I was meant to do, that it enthuses me, that it fills me with joy and energy, that I only want to give it away because it's so glorious. Well, if that's how you feel about your life, I'm so happy for you. If that's not how you feel about your life, please know that I think it may not be too late to recover some of what you may have had to lose, surrender, be unable to recognize, to have the experience that Sanaya has had, which is, it's not too late. So if you want to talk about that, you can reach me at my website, thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynshow.com. There's a button you can push to email me, ask me any questions you like. I'll be happy to hear from you. So we're going to go out on another song from Sanaya's CD, but I want to say, as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that you learned that you didn't know, something that inspired you, something that you simply enjoyed, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
My baby don't care for clothes. My baby don't care for shows. My baby just cares for me. My baby don't care. Not his style, not even an eternal smile. You see, it's something he don't see. My baby don't care who knows it. It's my baby just for shows. My baby is my baby, he just cares for me. My baby don't care for flowers and races, no. My baby don't care for, he don't care for height and places. Liz Taylor is not his style, not even clean a deeper smile. You see, it's just something he don't see. My baby don't care who knows it. 'Cause my baby just cares for me. Shabbat and Dabba way that zip bop, it is a boop, down, back down.
Still got some tang, so